Hi, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Free State 12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us. Okay, we do appreciate it. Maybe you're listening on the archives. As you know, we archive every show over at our website, which is education-talkradio.org. Education-talkradio.org. We put a new schedule up on Saturdays over there, and you can always see what we're doing. We have a past shows icon that takes you like a little time machine back to 2011 when we first started doing these podcasts. But if you scroll down on our homepage, you'll see all the shows scheduled for this week, whatever week we're in, and then some of the shows that we've just done recently, just before that. Okay, so it's a pretty good website. We have some industry news over there. Check it all out. Education-talkradio.org, and please go over, join our Equity Consortium, okay, the American Consortium for Equity and Education, all free. We're trying to get the voices of industry and educators together in pre-K-12 for equity. That's what we're about, accessibility to equal education. That's what we're about. Please, it's at ACE-ED.org. You'll see our magazine icon over there. That's called AC&E, Equity and Access. It's our online journal. Sign up for a consortium. The magazine will come free to your inbox. That's all you'll ever hear from us. We want to hear from you, your voice heard, ace-ed.org. Please join with us, or if you know somebody who's an educator, join with us, okay, as well. We have a nice show today. Today it turned out to be a Camden Day, Camden, New Jersey. Okay, my show just an hour ago was with Ron Miller, who's a terrific educational blogger. He's from Camden, New Jersey. My guest today, George Former, is an administrator at an elementary school in Camden, New Jersey, right across the river from where I used to live. I grew up in Philadelphia, and I'll tell George how old, okay, I am by this fact. Good morning, George.
Good morning. How are you, Larry?
I'm fine. Now, you want to know how old I am? I still remember when the Ben Franklin Bridge was called the Delaware River Bridge. Okay.
I don't remember that.
No, you couldn't remember that. You couldn't remember that. Let's put it this way. I went to school with William Penn's youngest son. Okay, it's that simple.
Okay. Okay.
All right, now I'm only kidding. But of course, I did grow up in Philly, starting in the 1950s. I do remember that. The Walt Whitman Bridge. I still remember when they built that. And I hope you occasionally, even in the pandemic, can get across the bridge and have a good. Good cheesesteak over there, okay? George, welcome to
the
show.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Tell me about where you teach. And George, by the way, has a blog, wonderful blog, and it's called Farmer, like George Farmer, Farmer and the Bell. Farmer and the Bell, which I love that title. Okay, so you can go over there and check it out, farmerandthebell.com. All right, George, tell me about where you teach and what life's like in Camden these days, which I mentioned. Do you know Ron Miller, by the way?
I do know Rand Miller. He's a good friend of mine.
Well, he was on the show. This is so funny. He was on the show I did earlier this morning at 9 a.m. And I knew both of you. It's just coincidental. And I knew both of you were from Camden. But when I kept seeing Camden, I forgot that both of you were from Camden. It was the weirdest thing. Okay, so I should have mentioned you to him, and I forgot to do that. But he's a good guy, and I'll send you the link to his show, which I did just a few minutes ago. Okay,
I'll
vice versa here. All right, so I'll send you your show to him and his show to you, and he's a good guy.
Sounds good. Yeah, he's an absolutely good guy, good friend of mine. I'm down here in Camden in the Kramer Hill section. At Katz Dolcey Academy, and here we have about 400 students. The city has evolved. The city has grown. It's beautiful. Since I was a young man up until now, seeing everything go full circle, it's funny because my mom was an educator at Bonzo Elementary School in Camden, and I had the opportunity to teach one of her students' children. So everything comes full circle.
It does. It does, and it's good to hear. You know, Camden hit some hard times. It really, really did, and you know, it literally across the river from Philadelphia. And I'm glad to hear it's coming back. Okay, I hope so. I wish good old Camden the best. You know, it's cool.
Yeah. It's wonderful. We have the Sixers practice facility down here now. We have the waterfront has taken on a whole new landscape.
You have the aquarium.
Yeah. The aquarium down there. There's a lot of good, positive things going on in Camden.
Yeah, it's good. It's good news because I said they were in hard times for a while, really hard times for a while, and I'm glad it's coming together. So you're a doctoral candidate. Where are you going for your doctorate?
I'm at Capella University. So the easiest thing for me with my three children, 8, 6, and 4 years old, was to go online. So it's never a dull moment.
Doesn't matter with Capella. I know those folks pretty well. I used to deal with them quite often. They're nice folks. You got the blog, which I love, George Farmer. Farmer and the Bell. Get it, everybody? Farmerandthebell.com. It's a pretty nice blog, I got to tell you. And are you a principal at school?
I am, yes.
Okay, and talk to me then about how COVID really has made a difference in education. I hope it winds up being a positive one. What happened on March 13th? All of a sudden, the world came to an end.
Yeah, it's amazing because everyone was operating, everyone was going full steam ahead, and then March 13th, we got the call, shut everything down, and at that moment, you know, everyone was in a tailspin. Education went into a tailspin. We kind of saw it coming weeks in advance and tried to anticipate it, but the reality is, was anyone truly, really ready? And the answer to that was no.
No.
No one was 100% ready, and we found that out when we had to go into remote learning, and we had to scrounge around and make sure students had their proper equipment to do their schoolwork online from home, and we ran into issues where students didn't have internet access, and people needed more Chromebooks. So it was a very difficult time.
It still is. And talk about you're at a charter school, right?
Yes, charter school. Yes.
Okay. So what was the situation with your kids? Okay, and I remind everybody, charter schools are public schools. What was the situation? How many kids had access, et cetera? When all of a sudden everything hit the fan, where were the kids?
Yeah, so we were fortunate enough. So we've always been trying to go to a one-to-one student ratio. So we were fortunate enough to be able to do that, starting at third grade and fourth grade. So we're pre-K through four in my building. Third and fourth grade always had one-to-one. So the third and fourth grade, that was easy. The challenge came for kindergarten through second grade and making sure that they had the appropriate equipment at home to be able to work online. So there was a lot of issues where we began first giving out packets to a lot of students. And that's where we began to see the inequalities that exist.
Oh,
so we had some communities who were able to go one-to-one, whereas we weren't able to necessarily go one-to-one right off the bat. And so students had to have packets, and with those packets, students weren't able to receive the feedback right away that they would be able to receive in the classroom. And so we had to get our tech department involved, and we had to make more purchases, and we reached out to parents and let them know, come up to the school, pick up a charger, pick up a Chromebook, and it's yours to use. We had to go to a Google Classroom platform. So there was a lot of learning curves in there, but we were able to work with our parents to provide every student with a Chromebook so that they were able to successfully complete remote learning.
And how was access for the kids? You know, and I'll tell you a story. I did a show a few months ago with the New York High School of the Future, the Bronx High School for the Future, which is a public school. Okay, and they're in the poorest congressional district in the country, in the Bronx. Okay, they got every kid a Chromebook, and I don't know the exact number, so I'll make one up. Like 60% of the kids didn't have access, so they had Chromebooks, which makes for a nice paperweight when you don't have access.
Yeah.
Okay, internet access.
Right.
Yeah, it's lovely. Right. Thank you for the paperweight. Okay, and I know they shuffled and got everything up, but how about what did you find out about access for the kids?
So we also found out the same thing. We found that some of the students did not have internet access at home. So as you pointed out, providing Chromebooks is one thing, but what good is the Chromebook if you do not have internet access? So we had parents who called and said, listen, my child is actually using my phone to complete their work because I have 4G or whatever other capabilities that they had. So we have wonderful social workers here. So we were able to get our social workers to connect with Comcast and other organizations to be able to provide our families who didn't have internet access. So we had roughly about 20% who were without internet access, who had a Chromebook at home but couldn't do anything with the Chromebook because of the lack of internet access.
Isn't it amazing? And so let me ask you, and this is what you kind of wanted to talk about, okay, here because of COVID-19, the pandemic. By the way, come September, this is going to be one crazy school year, okay? And we have to know that. We don't know if schools are going to reopen. We don't know if it's going to be remote. We don't know if it's going to be half and half. We don't know anything. We don't know if the disease is coming back, et cetera. Plus, we've got, and who can blame them, the calls for social justice. Okay, so all this is it makes for a pretty crazy year in education, and it might turn out to be really, really good opportunity to kind of clean out the stables and change everything and make it for the better when it reveals all the shortcomings we had. When you looked at this, George, and I know you had a good school, you have a good school, okay, and most of your friends have good schools, okay, they try their best, and they think they're cranking along, and all of a sudden March 13th hit. When you really look at it, not only just from your school, but just across the board, okay, what did COVID-19 reveal about education? It kind of started to peel away the onion.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of things that were revealed. One of the biggest things that we just touched on was that there are so many inequalities that exist. We knew from a certain degree that these exist, but we didn't know to the magnitude in which they existed. So we talked about students not having internet access at home, not having one-to-one computer ratios. But what about the aspect that a lot of students relied on meals from the school? So a lot of the kids,
we had to
provide meals, three meals a day, at least minimum two meals a day for our students and our families, because the school was the primary source of food for a lot of our families. So even now, even today, we're still passing out food, breakfast and lunch, to our families. And the wonderful thing about it is we don't limit the number that they want. If they come in and they say they need five, we provide five. They say they need two, we provide two. So that's another thing that education wasn't prepared for. We just thought it was an educational base. We're just providing these learning tools for these students. But no, we're also here for food. We're also here for social emotional concerns. One of my biggest concerns is, what is this going to look like when the students return? We see the social justice. We see the cause for social justice. How many students have seen the murder of George Floyd over the internet? How many people's students or families were affected by COVID-19 who lost their lives?
Is your school mostly African-American or Latino, whatever?
My school, we have about a 70-30 ratio, mostly Latinx community, and 30% black.
Okay. And that community, what percentage of people are dependent on you for food? To the school.
We have a large percentage. We have about, I would say, about 60%.
Isn't that amazing?
So between our four campuses, we do at least 700 meals a day.
Isn't that, and God bless you for doing that. Don't misunderstand that, but, for everybody. But it's just astounding when you actually start seeing this, okay? And all of a sudden people realize that the school, okay, is people are depending on it not only for education but for nutrition. You're not only feeding the kid's mind, you're feeding the kid and half the time their family. Okay, it's unbelievable.
Exactly. It is. It truly is. It truly is. And we're just fortunate to be able to do this for our families. And another wonderful thing is that you don't have to go to the school. If you live in Camden and we're the closest school to you, come on, get some food, and we'll feed you, and you take it home and feed your family.
Wow! So you're providing this for people even outside of your literal school community.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Wow!
Our mindset is we want to help the community as a whole, and not just people who have ties to our school building.
Good for you, man. I got to tell you, that's incredible. I have to ask this question. I love asking this because I still can't. When you were going to college to be a teacher and now an administrator, do you ever think you'd be doing this?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's not.
I'm fine. Yeah, it's funny that you asked me that question because I talk to my new teachers every year, and at the end of the year, I tell them, what were they prepared for and what were they not prepared for? And 90% of the things that occurred during that year, they were not prepared for.
That's right. Which is interesting because you would think, I don't know, I know, I can't remember what they call it now. It used to be Trenton State. It's really close to you, okay, and some of the other schools. And what do they call Trenton State now? It's not College of New Jersey. That's Rutgers.
It's not College of, I don't recall off the top of my head what Trenton State is.
Yeah, I can't remember either, okay? But my point is they have got to start understanding what schools do at the level where they're teaching people to become teachers. Okay, it goes way beyond, okay, just classroom learning these days. And people have to be prepared for this because this is going to be their profession, okay? It's having kids learn in this environment. It's really just it's really just amazing at who could have predicted this was coming down the pike. And you said something interesting. I want to harp on for a second. You talked about, and people always say this, remote learning, distance learning, we call it, okay? And I'm beginning to prefer the word, and George, help me out here, remote education, okay,
mm-hmm.
and distance education. And the reason I'm saying that, this is not a bite on any teacher or anything like that, are we sure the kids are learning right now, that we're really being effective? And how can we be sure that we are being effective in this craziness, if I may add, for which so few teachers have ever been prepared to teach in this kind of situation. That's not an indictment of teachers, but if we're mm-hmm. teaching, that implies learning, okay? And I would like to know how we're assessing and that kind of thing, because this is a brutal time. George.
Yeah, I think that that's an absolutely fair point. If we just evaluate what was done last year, we saw that there was a huge strain on parents. And parents had a very difficult time juggling the home life and
mm-hmm.
school and their work and helping educating their children. So there has to be some education that's going forth. And we need to be honest with ourselves as educators. Did we provide the best tools and resources for our students last year? And if we did, then great. But if we didn't, what are we going to do different this upcoming year?
Exactly.
As you mentioned.
Exactly.
As you mentioned, it could be a hybrid of learning. It could be in person. It could be both. It could be completely virtual learning.
Yep.
But at some point, we're going to have to do better than what we previously did.
So how do we do that? I mean, because teachers are not trained to teach online. Some do
mm-hmm.
it. Okay, but and I guess there's a few courses around the world about it, but for the most part, teachers are not trained to teach online. They may be doing that through the rest of this year, and Lord knows for how long afterwards. So you're
mm-hmm.
an administrator, okay, and you deal with your fellow administrators, your colleagues. How can you help train your teachers to do this so it really can be assessed and make sense?
So one of the things that we have to do is we have to increase the opportunities for our teachers and students to engage in synchronous learning. We can't rely on log on to Google Classroom and this is what you're going to do. We have to provide almost the same setting but from
mm-hmm.
a virtual feel. So there
yep.
has to be some live interactive teaching that is going on that the teacher can interact with the student face-to-face. So in a sense, that flipped classroom theory has to become a reality now. So we have to have teachers in front of our students, synchronous teaching, so that it almost simulates a live in-person experience and interaction. So we have to begin as leaders in a school building, begin to transition our teachers and begin to get them to think a little bit different, because you're not going to be able to sit there and actually get to a student physically and see what they're doing. So now a small example would be now you have to show that book to the screen. So if there's
yeah.
there's little nuances that go into this. So we have to begin to start to prepare our teachers. It's easy as an administrator to say we're going to teach online. But just as you
yeah.
alluded to, how are we going to do that? So we
yeah.
have to begin those steps. We have to start those conversations. We even have to model that. We have to model what does it look like? So when professional development occurs, if we're going remotely, we need to, as administrators, show them remotely what it looks like. What is the expectation that we are expecting out of our teachers? How do we engage? What are the best practices? So these are things that we need to begin to think about now and implement now so that when this happens, because we don't know if it's going to happen, but we can all assume that it probably will, we need to be ready.
Exactly, leading by example. And let me ask you this question. And again, I'm only talking about Camden because you're from Camden. Okay, how are we doing on all this?
We're coming along. So I've been in meetings every day this week, coming up with protocols for remote learning, protocols for when the students come back, if it's going to be a hybrid session, if it's going to be virtual, if it's going to be 2 days on or 1 day off, or one day for deep cleaning. There's so many nuances that are going into it, but we are progressing and moving in that direction. The wonderful thing about Camden is all the schools are working together. No one's looking to one up the other campus. We're all in it together. We're all trying to do the same thing to provide the best learning experience for our students, to keeping them safe and keeping our staff safe at the same time.
How many high schools are in Camden? I remember Camden High, but I can't remember if there were other high schools. How many are in high school? How many high schools?
So we have, so there's Woodrow Wilson, who's the rival to Camden High, so to speak.
Yeah, you can rename that one. We'll go into that in a minute. Yeah, you can rename that school next. Yeah.
Yes, and then Mastery just unveiled a high school also, so there's three.
So you got three high schools.
Three high schools.
For some reason, only Camden High is sticking in my head for some reason. Let's swing over to that for a second. Okay, Woodrow Wilson High School, as you well know, the college at Woodrow Wilson of Public Princeton of Public Administration was the Woodrow Wilson School. They just changed that because basically he was a racist. I don't care what anybody says.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely was. Now you got Woodrow Wilson High School. How many kids? What's the demographics of Camden? It's mostly black and Latino, right?
Yes, it is. Right? Mostly black, yes.
Yeah, all right. So now you got Woodrow Wilson High School. Hello, are they thinking of changing it?
Yes, they are thinking about changing it, and I think that it's about time, because I've been calling for this for years.
I would say.
What does that say to our students? What does that say to our students who have to attend a high school named after someone who was racist? And students are predominantly black and Latinx. What does that say to our students? It's almost very insensitive. It's culturally irresponsible to have a high school named after someone in that manner.
It is. So what are they doing about it? Are they thinking about changing it for real?
So they are thinking about changing it. There's monuments that have come down in specific parks in Camden. And the
really?
Next topic of conversation.
With who?
There was a, right across from Camden High, there was a park. And that monument came down maybe about, last month, that monument came down.
What was the monument?
So Camden is beginning. I forgot the name of the person on the monument, but it was someone who had racist ties.
Well, yeah, obviously. I'm just trying to think of who it could be.
Yeah.
You're probably not Kate Smith. That was a Flyers joke. Right. We'll get into that. That was a Flyers joke.
But I think it's great. I think.
Yeah. It's got to be changed.
I think it's great that the board. Go ahead.
No, you go. Finish up. You think it's great that the board?
I think it's great that the board is beginning to have this conversation to change the name of Woodrow Wilson. And so the option should be to allow the residents and the students to have a voice and have a say in what this school is going to be named after or who this school is going to be named after next.
Well, I can keep it simple. Why'd you name it after Jackie Wilson?
Or Barack Obama.
Your love's gone higher than it ever lifted before. Jackie Wilson.
There are so many people out there.
They're still going to Wilson.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
It's that
but
simple.
And there's so many positive names out there. There's so many figures out there.
Yeah, hello, exactly. Yeah, it's time to make that change. It really is. And, you know, that brings about something else, okay, with the school population being, mostly Latino and mostly African-American, okay, and then probably a few other things thrown in there, but mostly that. How are the teachers doing, okay? I shouldn't ask it that way. Let me ask it a different way. How's the curriculum reflecting the student body? Okay, that's a whole big thing now that's happening, and this is a good time to really think about that and do it, because in order to engage kids and give them the rigorous curriculum they need, okay? You've got to engage them with something that's relevant to them. And, of course, we have to make sure the curriculum is in all areas. So what's going on with that? In Camden, which is a good example, because it's not that huge a district, and hopefully they'll be able to do stuff on that. Tell me about it.
It is a perfect example, and I think now is the time where we need to evaluate what the curriculum looks like and in terms to diversity. When we look at the curriculum now and we look at its comparison to other diverse curriculums, it's not diverse. So what we need to do is we need to evaluate what we're doing. We need to evaluate the language arts components, and we need to show our students that there are texts out there that are diverse.
Absolutely.
Imagine what it would mean for a black student to read a book about another black student, or a Latinx student to read a book about another Latinx historian figure, or an Asian student to read another text about. We have to begin to think broader. We have to begin to see these nuances in education, and it has to become more diverse.
Are they working towards that?
I haven't seen anyone work towards it yet, and I've been calling for it, and I think now's the time for action, and I do believe within the next few months, we will work towards creating a more diverse curriculum.
Yeah, you think about it. In a place like Camden, New Jersey, okay, where it's a perfect microcosm of what we're talking about.
It is a perfect microcosm, and I know for professional development in this building, we're beginning to unveil what it looks like to have a diverse curriculum, what it looks like to have a diverse staff, what it means to be culturally relevant and culturally responsive in our schools.
Yeah, talk to your buddy Ron. He's all about that, I got to tell you.
Oh, yeah, he is.
He really is. But I'll tell you something else that I've learned, all right? If you make the curriculum culturally relevant and do it right, you can up the standards of rigor in that curriculum. The kids will be more engaged in what they're learning. And as such, the standards that the teacher has can be very, very rigorous. The kids will rise to the occasion because now it's of interest to them. Okay, we've been dancing around it too long. Okay, and, black or Latino or whatever the case may be, teach to your students. I always use the example of Walmart. Walmart asks their customers what they want, and if the customers don't like it, Walmart discontinues it, and that's the same with any company. Well, it's the same thing with what we're trying to do. We've got customers. We call them students, okay? Make the curriculum relevant for them. You'll see a higher level of engagement and a higher level of rigor and a higher level of teacher engagement as well. There you go. There's my theory.
And your theory is absolutely right. We always come into the years saying this is what they need to learn, this is how they need to learn it, but we never take the time as educators to get the feedback from students and talk to them about what they want to learn and how they want to learn it. And we talk about engagement and rigor in the most unengaging ways. We need to be able to sit down with our students and talk about they have a voice. Let's teach them how to use their voice, teach them how to speak up, teach them that they have value and their words have meaning and what they say matters and their opinions matter, especially when it comes to education. So if we give them the opportunity to speak, if we give them the opportunity to tell us what they want, then it will create those engaging atmospheres and students will be more engaged because they will have buy-in to that. And they will see themselves in the text, and they will see themselves in the books, and they will see themselves in the curriculum.
Right.
And it won't be something that's being taught at them, but it will be a collaborative process.
Bingo. Exactly right. And the teachers who love to test kids and teach kids and have kids excited about what they're learning will be amazed at how much more interest there is from the kids. It's a win-win.
Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Win-win.
So,
yep.
Win-win. Got to do it. And, you asked me to ask you this next question. I'm going to. And it hasn't come up that much recently, but I got to ask it, considering all the things that are going on in the States here right now. But it's interesting. Camden has been getting a lot of notoriety on how they changed their whole police force a few years ago. Okay? And just killed their old police department. No, that's a terrible word to use. Defunded, got rid of, et cetera, their old police department and rebuilt it from scratch, okay? And it's getting a lot of good vibes about it, okay, good reports, et cetera. I hope they're all accurate, et cetera. That brings up the question, and again, the perfect city to do this, you wanted me to ask you about resource officers in schools, all right? Well, what do you think's going on with that? Put your thoughts on that, George.
So there have been a lot of questions regarding resource officers in schools, given the light of police brutality. And my stance is a little bit different. I would never make a blanket statement and say we need to remove all police officers from the schools. But what I do think should happen is I think there should be a partnership between schools and police officers, schools and police buildings, schools and county officials, so that retired officers can start to make that transition into the school. And then you can have your retired officers in the school as your resource officers. And I say that for a number of reasons. One, retired officers are not looking to have action. It's just a reality. They're looking at the end of their career, and they're looking to de-escalate situations.
Right.
They're not looking
to
get involved.
That's a great point, I got to tell you. That's funny.
They're looking to de-escalate situations, so they're able to talk to students in a manner that's not offensive, in a manner that doesn't seem like they're trying to be.
This, hopefully. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And in a way that they're not trying to be combative. So we have officers, retired officers, in our school building. So if there's ever a situation, I don't rely on my retired officers to go break up a situation or go get a student. That's my responsibility. But what I would do is say, can you sit with this student while I talk with the other student? And I know from experience, because he's a retired officer, he's going to have a conversation with that student. And he's going to try to talk that student down and try to calm that student down and try to rationalize with that student. So there's a place, I believe, for retired officers or officers who are close to retirement to be able to assimilate into the school districts.
Are they wearing uniforms, your guys or ladies?
No,
your
they
officers?
Don't. No. Yeah, they wear a school T-shirt, and that's it.
No. That's good.
Yeah, it is.
I like
it
that. It de-escalates the situation immediately, by the way, by doing that.
It does, and the students love our officers. They high-five them when they come in. They won't even come into the building without saying hi to them. They greet them at the door.
Exactly.
They high-five them. They try to run around. It's a wonderful relationship. And one of the other things is our officers have been officers in the city of Camden, so they know the families.
Yeah.
They know the families.
Right.
They know the students. So there's a natural relationship there. So there's power, I believe, in having our officers who are retired or close to retirement assimilate into the school district.
It's not bad. What are you hearing, like, from Camden High, okay, about all this with the school officers?
So I don't know if you're aware, but Camden High is being remodeled.
I'm not aware of that.
They actually knocked Camden High down, and now it's being rebuilt. So it should be ready
as a new Camden High? It's going to be still be called Camden High?
As a new Camden High.
Yeah. Okay.
It'll still be Camden High. Yeah, so Camden High has been in a hybrid building, in a big picture building, so they've been there. So Camden High is beginning to address their resource officers, but they haven't had a huge issue regarding student relationships with their resource officers.
Good. So things are pretty calm and all that, and of course kids aren't even in school now. Anyway, which brings me to another point. How was attendance during this pandemic time? And I know it's summertime now, but during school?
See, attendance was a huge concern because one of the big concerns was how do you track student attendance online?
Exactly.
So students can go online. They can go on at 10 o'clock. They could go on at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, and by the way, don't think you guys are the only ones. It was right across the board. It was right across
right.
the board.
Does that count for a whole day? Does that count for a half a day? Does that count at all? So there were a lot of concerns with the attendance and students. Largely enough, a lot of our students were engaged, and a lot of our students showed up every day. The issue more so became towards the end of the year with the fatigue of the students being online and having to do all those assignments all day online. So there was a lot of student fatigue towards the end of the year. Well, largely, our students did a fantastic job in completing their assignments online.
That's good. I remember I got caught cutting school in 12th grade driving down to Atlantic City, okay, when the first Atlantic City Expressway was brand new. There's how old I am again. Right? My car blew up. coming home. Just like my radiator blew up. Okay. Unbelievable, huh? I went to Overbrook in Philly, by the way. I went to Overbrook.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was great. It was great stuff, and I love my old hometown and Camden right across the way, I got to tell you. George, this is good stuff, okay? And I'm telling you, you're dead on right. We cannot wait any longer, okay? And any school district that's trying to put off professional development about cultural competence, about how to teach online, any of those subjects is making a mistake because we've got to get this ready because we don't know what's going to happen in September. And like you just said, attendance was not perfect like it would be if the buildings were open. Okay, it's never perfect anyway, but you know what I mean. All right, we dropped in percentages everywhere, and we just got to make sure that doesn't happen. And the other thing is we got to figure out how to assess these kids. Okay, how do we assess them? Okay, it's really going to be some school year, my friend.
Yeah, I'll just say this. I think we need to get better at performance-based assessments. We need to provide an atmosphere where students can engage in their learning and make it real-life applicable learning. It just can't be rote memorization. They have to be able to engage in their learning and incorporate it across all subject lines. So we need to do better with project-based learning, and this will be the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Go to PBL. You know PBL works, right? Do you know them?
Yes, I do.
Okay, they're good. They're a good group. I work with them a lot, and they've been trying so hard. Project-based learning has become a big thing, more so now in the pandemic than ever before. So you're right on the right track there, George. You're a good man. Good luck getting your doctorate. If you had gone to the University of Larry, I would have given you one just for being on the show, a doctorate.
I'll keep that in mind for my children.
just so you know, especially online now, it's a much less expensive experience going to the University of Larry. Okay, so I'll call you Dr. Farmer and say thank you very much, my friend. You stay safe, okay? Please.
All right. You as well. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Have a great day. Enjoy Camden. When you get a cheesesteak, when you do, think of me, please. Okay?
We'll do, Larry. Thanks
pal.
For having me.
Take care. Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye. George Farmer, everybody. George is an administrator, okay, at an elementary school in good old Camden, New Jersey. I'm telling you, it's Camden, New Jersey Day here at Education Talk Radio. He's going to be Dr. Farmer pretty soon. His blog is Farmer and the Bell, farmerandthebell.com. I love that. Okay, we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We'll tweet it out over to EduTalk Radio. Please join our consortium, everybody involved with equity in schools and access to learning over at ace-ed.org, okay, ace-ed.org. You'll see our magazine over there. Everything we do over there is free. Please go over. Join that consortium. We get a lot of members, new members every day. We want your voice heard over there. Thanks for listening. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Have a safe day.